Welcome back to Cano Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we bring you the week's top headlines and hear industry experts weigh in on how these stories are affecting the industry. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. Today, our first guest literally grew up in the industry as the daughter of a 50-year cannabis cultivator. In 2015, she co-founded a celebrity cannabis agency working with iconic artists like Cypress Hill, and in 2019, was selected from over 7,500 nominees as High Times Female 50 honoree and named 2 years in a row most influential women in cannabis, and now serves as president and CEO of Bhang. Please welcome Jamie Pearson.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. This is quite the resume. It was almost was out of breath by the end. And our next guest is from our phenomenal research team here at New Frontier Data. She is the Director of Industry Analytics. Please welcome Dr. Molly McCann.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Before we get started, Jamie, would you mind just giving, for any of our listeners that aren't familiar with Bhang and your company, just giving them a little background on who you are, what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Bhang is, you know, we consider ourselves the OG brand. We're going into our 10th year. We started with a flagship chocolate bar, which was developed by our founder, Scott Van Rixel, who's a master chocolatier. So Bhang's story is a little bit different than the typical cannabis company, because we didn't have a couple of guys who said, oh, let's go, you know, get rich or go make cannabis products. We started with a chocolate bar because that's what our founder knew and did well. He was putting gourmet chocolate in Whole Foods and Dean and DeLuca for 25 years and added cannabis as an ingredient. We were the first company to put cannabis on a nutritional fact panel, have Lloyd's of London product liability insurance, and do end-to-end full bar and full batch testing before a single product hit the shelves. So Bhang's really known as, pun intended, blazing the trail for, you know, raising the bar and the standard for edibles in the industry as a whole. We're really known for our THC-infused cannabis chocolate bars, but have since, you know, evolved into what we are now, which is a publicly traded company. We're traded on the CSE and we're traded on the OTC under the call symbols BHNG. And we have a little over 70 SKUs of both cannabis and hemp-derived CBD products, and have been selling CBD products for 9 years. So long before the CBD craze, you know, hit America. We are currently the number one and number two edible in Canada, not chocolate, but edible. And I'm really proud of that. Our brand started selling in Canada in February. So when you think about that, it was right before COVID hit, and we're doing great in Canada. So we're just happy to be in cannabis, especially during COVID, when you look back and you think, oh, we're considered an essential service for many, many governments. Ironically, we're still operating in prohibition. So I think that this is going to change some things for the industry as a whole. But that's who Bhang is. That's who I am. I took over as CEO in December, so it's been 5 months. And I've been with the company 5 years. And so I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be in the cannabis and excited to be part of this podcast. I think the New Frontier Data, I want to give a shout out to New Frontier Data as one of the, you know, premier data companies in the industry, and operating with data-driven decisions is super, super important. So I'm, you know, really happy to have companies like Frontier Data out there blazing a trail also. Makes our lives easier.
Well, thank you so much for the shout out and congrats on the new position. All right, well, we'll dive right in. LAWeekly.com reported pot industry has best April yet, but COVID-19 hampers growth. So as we saw during the week of March 16th, leading up to the nationwide lockdown, there was a mad rush to dispensaries for people to stock up before we went into lockdown. And while we saw record numbers across the board, flower still was in the lead, but we did see the biggest jump in growth within edibles. Jamie, what's your opinion on why edibles stood out the most out of any of the other products?
Well, I think it makes sense. You know, obviously COVID's a respiratory illness. I think people were, you know, concerned about smoking and putting things in their lungs. And I think there's a couple of other things that made sense, is that, you know, people were getting ready to be home and having to do things from home. And there was a high degree of stress. And so I think they wanted some consistency and predictability in in their high. If you were going to go teach your kids algebra, you wanted to be able to know how high you were going to get, right? So, what edibles provide is that consistency of dosage. It's very difficult if you're, you know, smoking a pipe or a bong or a joint to know if that crazy 34%, you know, THC flower, how much you have to smoke to have a high that is allows you to be functional. And I think what an edible allows you to do is, really get that dose, you know, more consistent. I think the other, you know, piece of that is that there were a bunch of people who lost their jobs and maybe came into the market. You know, we've been, you know, doing some boots on the ground, sort of qualitative research, and, you know, just doing some anecdotal asking people, you know, budtenders and buyers, what are you seeing out there in the marketplace? And what we're hearing is that there's a bunch of new people getting into the cannabis world who are dealing with anxiety and staying at home. Those people wanted to, you know, try, I think, edibles because there was some discretion, there's no smell, and there was the ability to have that consistent dose. And then I think the last part of this is just there are college students coming home and maybe, you know, mom and dad aren't so excited about having, Johnny, Billy, or Susie in the basement smoking weed, and they can have, you know, their cannabis and also, you know, have that discretion as well. So there's lots of reasons why I think edibles expanded. And then the other one that I think is a big one too, is that it lasts longer. You get more bang for your buck. I mean, pun intended, but no pun intended, right? You know, the high, if you take an edible, it generally lasts longer. And I think if you were going to need to hunker down and didn't know if you were going to be able to go back to a dispensary, that flower may not last, you know, those typical users as long as the edibles will. So I think there was a multitude of reasons why, you know, just starting with the fact that COVID's a long, you know, was at the beginning believed to be a respiratory illness. Now we know it might be way more than that, but that was what the initial thoughts were.
Right. Mm-hmm. Molly, do you have any additional working hypotheses on why edibles had such a big uptick?
Yeah, I actually had a list here of some of the things, and I think Jamie touched on almost all of them. Totally agree. You know, the common thing that we keep hearing when people are talking about the industry is the respiratory health. And I'm sure that is, you know, at least subconsciously playing into some people's decision, then consciously for some people. But I agree. I think that this extreme unprecedented shift in people's living situations has just upended everyone's habits. So I totally agree with what Jamie said. Edibles are less conspicuous. A lot of people are sheltering in place, either college kids sheltering in place with their parents, as Jamie suggested, or people with kids, young kids, who don't necessarily want to smoke in the presence of their kids. In a survey that we did a little while ago with consumers, we saw that the highest rates of support for social consumption spaces were among people in their, you know, mid-40s who had young kids and wanted to go somewhere that they could smoke that wasn't in the presence of their kids. So I think that edibles are a nice alternative to smoking for people in that situation. And then people have more time on their hands. So edibles, which typically have a longer onset time and last longer, you know, people aren't driving to work. They find themselves with, you know, time to take up these new hobbies. We see like baking is taking off and all of these other things as people are trying to spend time at home. So yeah, more time. And then I think the other thing, you know, we saw that people are still buying flower, of course. I think that flower is kind of a staple. It's the closest we have to like a bulk product. It's like going and buying a big bag of rice when all this started. But in terms of consuming it, smoking is really a social behavior. We saw that the sales of big pre-rolls are down because we know that people consume those with other people. They share it with other people and there's not as much sharing going on. So I think that edibles are more suited to solitary consumption.
Yeah, I feel the baking going up. I feel like if one more person brings me a loaf of banana bread, I lose my mind.
Well, that's exactly why we did the Baked with Bang promotion. We put this promotion out on TikTok and had people send us their videos of baking at home with our products. And we saw that, you know, you couldn't get toilet paper and you couldn't get flour either. And it was a really interesting thing. Well, if I'm stuck at home, I guess I'm going to make cookies. Well, we were inundated with entries, and we had cash prizes because we also were looking for a way to give back to our consumers. And so it's interesting to see that all of those things kind of, you know, I'm super grateful. Obviously, it's good to be Bang right now.
And you offer a little bit of fun. I mean, you offer a little bit of break and, you know, relief and having fun with it and doing TikTok. I just learned what TikTok was. So
absolutely. Another thing to figure out. I still don't have Twitter myself. And yeah, we won't get into that, but
yeah. Well, I guess my last question about this, as far as this article, how do you think operators are going to be responding to the shift? Do you think that a lot more people are going to be providing edibles and should they, if they're not really in that space?
That's a good question. It's not that simple. You have to have a commercial kitchen and, you know, if you were, you know, generally making flower, you know, trimming buds and putting them in a bag or doing whatever you were doing, if you were a flower or pre-roll maker, it's not that simple to just have an edible. That said, yeah, I do think that if people look into it, I expect to see more brands coming through with edibles, but I think people were doing that anyway.
Yeah. And I think the technology and all the processes have gotten so much better that they're going to have to play some catch up for the people that have been doing it for a while.
Well, you know, we're in 7 states right now, soon to be 9. And what I can tell you is that every state has different rules. Like, for example, one of the states we're in right now is Florida, and our partner there is Trulieve, but edibles aren't legal in Florida yet. So mm-hmm. they're sitting there with a commercial kitchen at the ready, and they can't sell any chocolate because it's not allowed yet. So that's one of the things is, you know, depending on what state you're in, yes, I think there'll be people jumping in, but in some states it's not possible, or it's cost prohibitive, or the license is difficult or whatever. But in some states you can find a co-packer that'll make the product for you, and then product development becomes the issue. And then there are people out there that do product development. So it's a time intensive, cost intensive process to develop an edible, just as it is to plant a seed, grow a flower, you know, trim it, cure it, dry it, package it. It's just, you know, a lot of people think all you got to do is grow a weed and put it in a package. It's just not that simple.
No, there's a whole infrastructure that you have to have in place to be successful. So,
right.
For sure. Well, moving on to adweek.com published an article that outlined the 5 ways quarantine has changed the cannabis industry forever. Mm-hmm. So a few of the takeaways were the new shopping methods. It's not just a crisis response. I think it's just super convenient. There's a major demand for next gen edibles. And infused products, and getting ready for the new value brand of cannabis. As far as the whole rise in delivery, curbside pickup, which we were never able to do that, do you think that this is going to be something that's going to stay long term?
Yeah, I think the shift in consumption's here to stay. I do. I think, you know, when COVID goes away, I think people will come back into the dispensaries. I think there's a lot of dispensaries that aren't well designed for curbside pickup. They may not have a ton of parking, and they may have been at a disadvantage because, you know, what we all know is the retail experience has been severely dictated in every environment by zoning, and not every zone allows, you know, dispensaries to exist. So In the different areas where Bang is, we see a green zone in Oakland and it's over in this particular part, or it can't be 100 feet from school. So you don't just get to go pick the sweet retail spot. You pick the spot that they'll let you have it in, and not all of them are well designed for that. But I do see the delivery services benefiting greatly from COVID. And I think what happens is consumers are changing their behavior and they're learning things like how to use Instacart. And I think buying cannabis from home is something people are going to keep doing, because the other part of it is the experience of walking in and talking to a bud tender. The new users will still do that, and I think the flower buyers will still do that, so they can come in and smell it and see it. And I think for that, but for edibles, I think we will be purchased by delivery services probably as much or more going into the future. I expect that anyway. I hope I'm right.
Molly, what are your thoughts? Do you think that it's going to be mostly edibles sticking to delivery and flower continuing to come into brick and mortar?
I think it really depends, because in a lot of markets, you can't open up the packaging and smell the flower, right? So it depends market to market, I think. But I think, yeah, delivery is just the convenience and, for now, the safety. And I think ongoing, people are going to be a little bit more conscious of safety, at least for the next few months as we go through this. But yeah, I think that delivery is definitely here to stay. And as Jamie said, I think that when you have a product that delivers a consistent effect and experience, then people know what they're getting. People will develop, you know, people already are developing stronger brand preferences. And as they get to know what these products are, and as the products have more and more consistent effects, I think that what's potentially being lost here is the in-store experience is really important for certain consumers. As Jamie said, for new consumers, it's really important. They want to ask questions. They want to talk to bud tenders. And then we also see, especially older consumers, when they do go into the store, they tend to want to talk to bud tenders. They want to ask questions. They want to hear about new products. They want more of a personal interaction. So I think that it'll change, you know, the in-store experience will change, but I think it's going to continue to be important to certain groups of people.
Yeah, for sure. We're seeing the, you know, and I think Molly probably, you know, obviously has more insight into the data than I do. But I think we're seeing more people kind of tapping into their creative juices at home and doing yoga and painting and, well, and we talked about the baking, and we see with our edibles in particular, with the chocolate, that they're being put in the coffee and the smoothie and the, you know, in their daily practice. And I'm curious to see, and I'll be watching that if COVID lifts. You know, we don't know what's going to come in the fall, but what we're curious to see if people just continue on with that practice, if it's just going to become part of their life. So, you know, there's some good and some bad coming out of all of this. And, you know, some of the good is, I think, you know, for Bang anyway, the behavior changes that lean people to use our chocolate.
Yeah. So in this article, they did mention the Chardonnay mom and the Equinox dad wanting the next gen of products that are, you know, organic, non-GMO, sugar-free, this and that. Do you, as an operator, do you see this request or demand for this kind of thing? Or do you think this is a pretty minimal?
No, for sure. And we, you know, Bang is keto and paleo friendly and vegan. Yeah. Our dark bars, we didn't design them that way. Dark chocolate's just a superfood. We all, you know, that's just the reality. And what people are starting to figure out as research is being done, that, you know, you can work out longer when you're high. And, you know, obviously when you use an alcohol analogy, everybody doesn't go to the liquor store and buy, you know, Everclear and try to get, you know, Blotto. You know, that Chardonnay mom is just looking to take the edge off, and, you know, a 2.5 milligram or 5 milligram microdose of chocolate right before you go work out, or, you know, mommy's little helper kind of thing. It's definitely what, the feedback we're getting from consumers and from people both on the spectrum of working out and on the spectrum of just wanting to relax. Or we get a lot of people that say that they use our products for sleep and they use it for stress and anxiety. And I just got a really heartfelt thank you email from a woman that said after she had her son, she wasn't able to use THC products anymore, that it's something shifted in her body, but she has PTSD. And she said, you know, after 16 years, I'm going to try it again. And she said, I feel like the weight of the world's been lifted. She used a 2.5 milligram microdose of Bang chocolate and was able to sleep through the night. And that's, anyway, you just get these messages and it's like, yeah, why you do this, you know?
Yeah. And I think it also just lists this, like, you know, persona of the stoner and this, yeah, you know, college or high school kid in a tie-dye t-shirt, just doing nothing.
Yes.
I mean, there's people, there's women working and homeschooling their kids, for goodness sake. We need, yeah, to get that job somehow.
Yeah.
Well, to wrap it up, just with all these changes, how should operators, do you think, should be defining success in this socially distanced COVID-19 world?
Unfortunately, I think we're going to see a lot of companies go under. And I think part of that is cannabis is just a difficult industry to operate in. We're swimming upstream. We're operating in prohibition. Basic things in business are difficult. You can't buy Google AdWords. You know, I'm dealing with a lot of companies that don't have bank accounts. And so I just think that the notion that, you know, people are getting rich quick in cannabis is just so far off. It takes, you know, 10 times longer, 10 times more money. It's just a difficult, difficult business to operate in and be successful. So, you know, I use the analogy, we know that 75 to 80% of the US American is living paycheck to paycheck. We just don't have a savers mentality. And I think in the cannabis industry, about 75 to 80%, and Molly probably knows these numbers better than me, but I think that the majority of our companies are living one disaster away from destruction. And so I think COVID's gonna take a lot of companies out. And I'm seeing that from my perspective as a brand. There's in seven states, I have seven unique operators operating under unique rules. You know, they're all having to practice social distancing in the manufacturing of their products. In Nevada, for example, all of the dispensaries shut down for the whole, you know, Massachusetts, they all shut down. And it was just delivery. And it's really hard to survive when you've got a growing concern that you're, you know, growing your operation, you're trying to expand, and then all of a sudden you have no sales outlet, you have no revenue. And I just am seeing companies, you know, go under. So what I would say to measure success right now would be survival. That would be the word of the day for me.
Molly, would you agree with that or anything to add?
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard. I think in a lot of industries, it seems like many businesses are not going to survive this. I think cannabis as an industry will be okay, but individual businesses, you know, may or may not survive. On the point about delivery and how helpful that's been for some places, I think one of the things that certain operators could do is think about, you know, these markets which have allowed for delivery and curbside pickup, we see how crucial that is. So perhaps operators could be, but not all states allow for that, right? So maybe consider talking to the cannabis regulator in your state. And if they don't allow for delivery or curbside pickup, you know, they revise these laws every so often. And maybe that's something you can make a case for. It could help your business survive, and it could help your consumers have access to your product. We did see that a lot of consumers at the beginning of this who said that their consumption had declined, part of it was access because they were in places where their dispensaries were closed.
We're in an election year, and cannabis has been deemed essential in almost every location where it exists. And there were a couple reasons for that. But I think, you know, here in Montana, what we heard was that they didn't want to put, with the giant unknown of what was going to happen with COVID, they didn't want to put an unnecessary strain on medical providers. So people that were not able to get cannabis might be pill seeking or, you know, going to get opiates, and they just didn't want to have to deal with that on top of everything else. So they just said, we're just going to keep cannabis as essential. And the reality was, kept a lot of people employed, and it kept tax revenue coming in. And I do think in an election year, I think a lot of the politicians are going to see history repeat itself. Just like at the end of the Depression, they made alcohol legal, they ended prohibition on alcohol. I think you're going to see a lot of legislators looking for new tax revenue, and we're going to end up having cannabis, you know, change the world, so to speak, because we're going to be able to rely on cannabis taxes. That's a lot of dollars that are coming into state and local coffers. And I think if the federal government were to use this as an opportunity to say, cannabis is essential, we're going to make it legal, you know, we have a real opportunity to, as an industry, to change, you know, be disruptive and change America's behavior and, you know, fix the opiate addiction and, or at least, you know, improve it. And so, I can mirror Molly's remarks. I think people need to be talking to their legislators and trying to make delivery services and all edibles and everything legal so that we can operate a business like it should be, because Americans have proven time and time again, they want this.
Yeah, I think that this being election year, just the job creation alone of where we are as a country is going to be a huge thing for people to be looking at moving forward. So,
absolutely.
Thank you so much. Well, we're almost out of time, but any parting words for our listeners, Molly and Jamie?
Yeah, sure. I think that the important takeaway when you're thinking about consumers and cannabis consumers is to understand that cannabis consumers are extremely varied. They're not a monolith. They behave in all kinds of different ways. We just did a recent study that found that almost 50% of people, of Americans, have tried cannabis at some point in their lives. And so if you can imagine the diversity of Americans, that's pretty much the diversity of cannabis consumers. So during this time, there's been a lot of talk about consumption increasing, and that was true because we did see that sales were increasing. But we don't, you know, that sales data can't tell you whether people are actually consuming more or if they're just stockpiling. So what we know from our consumer surveys is that the majority of people, or usually about half of the people, of consumers, say that their consumption hasn't actually changed yet. They're stocking up in anticipation of, you know, external factors, but they themselves haven't increased or decreased their use. And then the other half that have changed in some way are split between consuming more and consuming less. And that, again, has to do with these circumstances that people find themselves in, right? People who are, you know, at home have to consider the place that they are and the people that they're with. So I think the two reasons that really drive, or that we've seen so far that consumers tell us have been driving an increase in use, are stress and anxiety because of all of the unknowns, because of the world that we're living in right now, and boredom. So those are the two things that are driving increases in use. And then the things that are driving decreases in use are, we talked about some of these already, concerns about respiratory health, less social, being at home with other folks, and then access, potentially closing of dispensaries, or not wanting to go out to risk your health to travel to a dispensary or to meet your dealer if you're in an illicit market. And then financial concerns. A lot of people that we surveyed said that, you know, they just lost their job, or they're temporarily not working, or they don't know what's going to happen. So they don't want to be, spending money that they're not sure that they're going to have on cannabis. Cannabis in general is relatively inelastic, and in that people are always going to want it. But if people have to make a decision between paying rent or buying food and buying cannabis, that's not a difficult question. People are going to spend less on cannabis. We found in our survey that half of consumers said that they would significantly reduce the amount of cannabis that they consume before they spend any more than they already do on cannabis. So I think that operators need to think about who their consumer is and what the circumstances of their target consumer is, because they vary a lot. So understanding your consumer right now and thinking, really putting yourself in their shoes and thinking about what their life is like right now, that's how you can continue to meet their needs.
Thank you so much for that. Amy, anything from you?
Yeah, I think I'm more talking to the investors in the group, and I think what I would like to just impart is that we don't know what's going to happen to the economy at this point. And I think when we compare what's going on right now, the unemployment rate's really, really high. You know, they say it's the highest since the Great Depression. We know that bankruptcies and foreclosures lag behind unemployment. So I'm expecting just as a real estate investor, I'm expecting in, you know, December, January, that's where we're going to start seeing the bankruptcies and foreclosures really peaking. I would tell the operators out there to hoard their cash and be ready for hard times to come, because I think Molly's right. I think when people have to make the decision between making their rent payment, their food payment, their cannabis payment, or their, you know, buying their cannabis, that'll be a no-brainer. That said, when we look at times of trouble, they always say the things to stock up on are alcohol, guns, bullets, and cannabis, right? So it's also one of those things, you know, gold that you can barter with. And so I also feel like we're also uniquely poised, should the economy collapse, that cannabis is going to be okay. So my parting words would be hoard your cash. The worst is probably yet to come. And I, you know, I don't want to be a doomsday prepper, but I am trying to, you know, prepare for what's coming. And I, you know, the Warren Buffett comment, when the masses jump in, run, and when the masses run, jump in. And I think, you know, Warren Buffett said he's hoarding his cash. He's pretty smart. I'm going to follow suit and be ready for what comes at the first of, you know, Q1 2021. And rather than be paralyzed, I'm going to be poised to, you know, I'm stealing that from Cody Sanchez, don't be paralyzed, be poised to take action. And I think that's what people need to do. And for the people that are out there investing in cannabis, I think they're going to be rewarded if they pick the companies that are going to make it. I think the companies that are going to make it are going to be able to snap up shelf space in those brands that are out there winning the hearts and minds of the consumers right now. I think you'll win big with those. And so I think Bang's going to be one of those brands.
Well, we hope so. And luckily, a lot of most cannabis places are cash heavy since they don't have access to banks and banking. So hopefully that will be a positive for the industry. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today. And thank you to our listeners for joining us at CannaWeek. Please be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. And you can find these stories and more on New Frontier Data's Cannabis Insights Daily. You can subscribe on our site, newfrontierdata.com. I'm your host, Heather Wickline, and I will see you next time.
New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.